Earlier this month, 11 sites in New York were tapped to receive State Historic Preservation Awards, which are given out each year to honor excellence in the protection and revitalization of historic and cultural resources. To learn more about this distinction, including how properties make the list and what it means to be recognized, we're speaking with Daniel McKay, Deputy Commissioner for Historic Preservation in the state's Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation, which has administered the awards for four decades. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Pleased to be with you.
So if I'm a historic site in New York, why do I want to win a State Historic Preservation Award?
Because it's the state's highest honor for preservation, historic preservation-related activities. And while there are a number of local and regional and even a statewide not-for-profit that makes awards for historic preservation initiatives, this is the state agency's. These awards announced by the governor are the state agency's own awards and really recognize, represent the highest level of recognition that New York State Parks can offer a historic site or structure.
And does anything come with the award? I mean, do we get are we talking a plaque? Is there a trophy? any money, maybe?
No funds per se. The reason that the project may have been identified to us, there might be other reasons or other qualifications, but not the award itself that allows the site to tap into some potential grant or tax credit incentives. But what someone gets is the recognition, the honorific, and there is a framed certificate provided.
How does a site come up for consideration? Is there a nominating process, for example?
Many award programs work that way. Currently, the way our parks agency's program works is that amongst our staff of almost 60 who work in and around historic preservation issues, we take a look at really the projects that come to that come before us over the course of a year's work by staff here, and go through an internal review process. So we know, there are projects that emerge very quickly in the course of our work that we sort of put aside and say that may deserve recognition when the awards program calendar comes up. We then prepare a list for review by the State Review Board. That's an independent board that advises the agency on state and national register listings. And so that review board also offers its input, but it is an internal process. It is not one where a property can self-nominate, and typically these are properties that have come to the attention of the agency through the course of our annual workload.
Who's on that review board? Are we talking like a shadowy cabal that makes up the Golden Globes, or is this more like a respectable panel?
This is a very respectable panel. It's chaired by Doug Pirelli, who is a professor of archaeology at SUNY Buffalo. And it includes representation that, a diverse representation geographically, racially from around the state that has a background in historic preservation, architecture, and history.
Now, I saw this year we have 11 award winners. Is there a certain, limit on awards that can be given out? Or is it like, say, the Baseball Hall of Fame, in which anybody who's eligible, you get that 75% of the vote, you can get inducted into Cooperstown? How do you guys decide, how many awards you're going to give out?
Well, the award process was actually a bit different this year because it was basically virtual as opposed to in person. And I suppose to an extent, the fact that it has historically been an in-person event where we invite the selected awardees, that it's really been the length of program that has determined that somewhere between 10 and 12 10 or 12 projects is typically the range we can accommodate in an in-person program. Well, that all got thrown to the wind this year, and so in some ways we still have a list of 11 categories or 11 awards here, but at least one of the awards given this year is actually to multiple organizations, and that was a decision made to give a statewide historic preservation award, recognizing preservation groups, preservation not-for-profits, and advocacy groups statewide for their for excellence in organizational achievement, and really that's this very important component of historic preservation work in New York State. grassroots groups that are working locally or regionally. Those groups pivoted quickly under COVID, were innovative, moved their programming from in-person to online, created new types of programming, and really and then extended their reach. So, for example, we saw programs happening in the city of Buffalo that were attracting a national audience because the themes of those programs in Buffalo actually touched other cities and other community issues in other parts of the country. And so the reach, the reach and impact of New York State's historic preservation organizations went national and at times even international this year on certain issues. So there was great innovation in the preservation field. We would typically never have 45 to 50 organizations lined up to receive that award. This year we had the ability to give it and give generously.
Well, I feel like that's a good chance to pivot to, the award winners that are recognized this year. And I'm sure that they're like your babies and you love them all equally, but, we have limited time here. So could you highlight one or two sites that the listeners might be interested in?
Sure. I think one that really rose to the top quickly, again, as we were, as we do our good work here at the Division for Historic Preservation, there are projects that just jump out quickly as being notable for the extent of community involvement, the extent of municipal leadership in involved. And so in the village of Hoovelton, which is in the North Country up in St. Lawrence County, the village of Hoovelton was given an award for excellence in archaeology stewardship. And this is a small village that in the process of installing a new water tank and excavating lines for a sewer rehabilitation project, nothing particularly sexy about that, discovered several historic burials. They effectively ran into human remains in an unmapped cemetery in the village. And that is the sort of discovery that, by state law, shuts down a project, requires the coroner to step in, et cetera. The village leadership, the Department of Public Works, really responded appropriately and quickly to this, alerted our office, went through the proper protocols, and then out of great interest for, why these burials were found and with great respect for the human remains identified, engaged with SUNY Potsdam and the archaeology program there, and actually gave a field training opportunity for students in that program to do very careful exhumations of these human remains, reinterred those remains with a ceremony that provided the respectful reinterment. And when we see a municipality respond quickly and appropriately to such unexpected news in the course of a sewer project, take all the right steps, shut down the work, contact the appropriate authorities, that is award-winning behavior. And so that's one project that was called out this year, and credit to them.
So, Dan, I recently finished watching the Good Lord Bird miniseries on Showtime, which is about John Brown. And so the John Brown mention here really drew my attention. So, if there are other people like me who recently finished that, can you talk a little bit about that site, which they could visit over in Essex County?
Yes. So the John Brown Farm site is a state historic site just outside of Lake Placid. It is a remarkably beautiful and austere site right in the heart of the High Peaks region. It is where John Brown lived before leaving for his raid on Harper's Ferry. It is where his body was returned after the raid on Harper's Ferry took its turn, and he was he was sentenced and tried and killed. So his body, he is buried there along with several family members, and it's a beautifully intact, mid-1800s farmstead, beautiful building, beautiful setting. New York State partners, New York State Parks, operates the site. The land is owned by New York State DEC, and a further partner in how that historic site works is a friends group called John Brown Lives, And it's a remarkable not-for-profit with significantly involved local leadership and community members. And they took it upon themselves to propose in this past summer of significant activity by the Black Lives Matter movement nationally, they took it upon themselves to commemorate Black Lives Matter, that movement, and the many deaths that the African American community has suffered in this country through police violence, with a very sensitive and very evocative installation on site at John Brown Farm. And you know, there were this New York State Park system was used in a number of ways to by Black protesters and Black Lives Matter supporters over the course of the summer. On an informal basis, in a sense, because we could not permit activities under COVID, this was an art installation that we could permit. So in a sense, it was the only official Black Lives Matter event in New York State parks. It was so popular. It was intended to be up for about a month in the early summer. It was so popular, and it was getting such a positive and engaged public response that we permitted the installation to stay up through mid-fall. And it came down in a very, very moving ceremony this fall. And we have since accessioned, you know, the placards that were on display as part of this installation into the collection of the State Parks Agency. So we were quite moved with the proposal that a public space such as John Brown Farm Historic Site would be used to engage the public in a discussion, in a reflection about where our country stands in race relations, and wanted to recognize the work of John Brown Lives and artist Karen Davidson Seward, who is based in Lake Placid, for engaging with a New York State historic site in such an evocative manner.
And finally, Dan, how did you end up in the historic preservation game?
A circuitous route. I come from an environmental education and environmental studies background, but have been working in the preservation field for 20 years now on policy issues, primarily both in New York and Connecticut, and have been serving in this title since coming back from Connecticut about 3.5 years ago. So I have a very, it's my staff with the deep technical expertise combined, that I have the great fortune of working with here, but I don't have a technical degree in historic preservation.
Well, we've been speaking with Daniel McKay, Deputy Commissioner for Historic Preservation in the state's Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation. Dan, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Pleased to be with you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.